Hello, I'm Lina Khmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at World Cancer Day and hear a patient's journey with cancer. We will also have the latest on the humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. But first, Ebola has resurfaced in Uganda. Last week, the country's Ministry of Health said a 32-year-old male health worker died of the Sudan variant of Ebola at the main hospital in Mulago. Government health experts say they have identified those suspected to have had contact with him. Reporter Mugube Davis Rakangire has more from Kampala.
Dr. Diana Atwine is the permanent secretary at the Ministry of Health. She told reporters in Kampala on Thursday that her ministry has traced 44 people who are believed to have had contact with the medical personnel that succumbed to Ebola on 29th of January.
The confirmed case designated as the index case is a 32-year-old male nurse who was an employee of Mulago National Referral Hospital, who initially developed flu-like illness and fever symptoms and sought treatment at multiple health facilities. Postmortem samples confirmed Sudan Ebola virus.
The outbreak comes after the U.S. government announced the withdrawal of funding the World Health Organization. Uganda's health sector, which is largely supported by donations, is already battling mpox, which has claimed about 1,000 people, according to the Ministry of Health. Atwine says her ministry is up to the task, but she says it is incumbent upon the international community to work with Uganda to combat the spread of the deadly Ebola virus.
When we are declaring this Ebola outbreak, we are actually trying to meet our obligation as a country to make sure that we alert everyone, but also to make sure that our systems are activated and we deal with the threat in the country. But this threat can spill over. You know the issue of West Africa.
Ebola is a highly infectious disease which is transmitted through contact with infected bodily fluids and tissues. The symptoms present with high fever, chest pain, and difficulty in breathing, and may also lead to bleeding from different body parts like nose and mouth. A patient with Ebola may also experience fatigue, muscle pain, headache, and sore throat. Kampala resident Felix Mubiru says he now worries for his life.
Of course, I have to be careful, but sometimes I can't guard myself. You never know who has it, and of course, I have to keep on working. I have to get out. So,
Atwine says acts like hand washing with alcohol-based products or with soap and social distance can help in prevention of Ebola. She also says the health ministry is working on vaccinating health workers against the virus. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Uganda has launched its first clinical trial of a vaccine against the Sudan strain of Ebola, marking a significant step in combating the outbreak that claimed its first victim last week. The trial comes as health officials race to curb the spread of the virus, which has already led to two additional confirmed cases. Here is more. The study targets health workers and others exposed to the Sudan Ebola strain. The trial began 4 days after Uganda announced the death of a nurse in the capital, Kampala. Two more cases were confirmed on Monday among relatives of the first victim. Professor Bruce Kirenga is the principal investigator of the trial.
We have kicked off the vaccination for Ebola that broke out in the country last week. This exercise is involving one vaccine, which we have started with, and we are targeting people who are high risk. Those are people who have gotten in contact with the cases that we have confirmed in the country.
At least 234 contacts in this outbreak have been identified. This is the first trial to assess the efficacy of a vaccine against the Sudan strain. More than 2,000 doses of the experimental vaccine are available.
The type of Ebola we have here today, Ebola Sudan, up to now, does not have a vaccine which is licensed, which can be used during an outbreak situation. We have a vaccine actually in the country, the J&J vaccine, which has Ebola Zaire and a bit of Sudan, but its construct is not suitable for an outbreak response. It is suitable for a preventive response.
Health authorities say the nurse who died had sought both hospital treatment and the services of a traditional healer. They are investigating the source of this outbreak with support from the WHO.
The World Health Organization is embedded in different aspects of fighting this outbreak, and we have been with the Ministry of Health that has been in the lead, in whom we have great confidence that they are able to have a robust response to this outbreak. It being the eighth, there is a lot of confidence in what can be done, but we also call upon partners that we need the support to the government of Uganda for the work that is being done here.
Uganda has had multiple Ebola outbreaks, including one in 2000 that killed hundreds. Hopes are high that this vaccine trial could pave the way for a much-needed licensed vaccine against the Sudan strain of Ebola. Virologists from across Africa met recently in the Nigerian capital to hold talks and explore groundbreaking research and solutions to help the continent cope with emerging and re-emerging viral threats. Africa depends heavily on foreign aid to respond to disease outbreaks, but the African virologists say that could change soon. Timothy Obiezu has this report from Abuja.
Two major viral outbreaks, Marburg and Mpox, in Africa this year, the stakes at this three-day African virology conference couldn't be higher. But homegrown solutions to viruses and their outbreaks in Africa are at the heart of the dialogue.
Where we have neglected tropical diseases, a number of viruses which are important and they emanate from the African continent, we find that the attention of the Western countries are not so much focused as we expect. Normally they say Africa is resource constrained or resource limited, but now we have realized that those tags are not really true. We have a lot of resources and we can harness our own internal resources.
It is the second summit of the African Virologist Network, AVN, since its launch in 2019. The aim to provide a unified platform for African virologists to collaborate, showcase their research, and address common problems. The conference also seeks to promote Africa's groundbreaking solutions in virology, including vaccine development to global health.
In this conference, we have quite a number of presenters who are Africans working in America, in European laboratories among us now. So African virologists are contributing a lot to the global effort. We are training many young virologists to take up the field. So in the near future, we shall be producing our own vaccine and even exporting to other countries abroad.
Attendees see the conference as timely, as many African countries often struggle to respond to disease outbreaks due to limited resources, poor health systems, dependence on international aid, and global vaccine inequity. Experts say climate change and raging conflicts have exacerbated disease spread and sometimes hinder response efforts. In 2024, Africa recorded over 34,000 confirmed and suspected cases of Mpox, with over 850 deaths. Professor of Virology Adewale Tomori says Africa must leverage on disease prevention rather than control.
The summit, obviously, it is very crucial for Africa. Africa at the present moment is at the begging point. The world comes to us very late after the epidemic has gone all over the place. And I think it's in our role as virologists, actually our focus should be on prevention rather than on controlling those epidemics.
Adiku says African virologists are working to develop vaccines that are sourced from local biological materials like insects and can adapt to Africa's climate. According to Adiku, with more government and private sector funding for research, Africa will have a safer future. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
We asked listeners to share what concerns them in terms of viral diseases and what more should be done to prevent the spread of viruses in their communities. Here are some reactions from the DRC.
The epidemic that worries me a lot now is mpox, because it's highly contagious. And if it continues with this intensity in our entity, it's likely to wipe us out. To protect myself, I follow the advice of health professionals. I respect the barrier measures, and when we are asked to be vaccinated, I won't hesitate to protect myself. The health authorities need to increase the number of vaccinations, step up public awareness campaigns, and make batches of condoms available, because the disease is also transmitted rapidly by sexual intercourse.
Sanitation is a challenge in many households, which is why cholera is springing up in the town. There are many places where rainwater stagnates. There are hardly any dustbins left in the plots. The population density is becoming too high. We are drinking water from the lake, which is sometimes not as available from the taps. In short, the population is exposed to the cholera epidemic that authorities do not know how to control. However, if the government managed to put an end to the war so that all the people concentrated in the sites for the displaced could return to their villages, the city would be cleared and multiple epidemics could be prevented.
I have noticed that the spread of cholera depends on the negligence of the population. We hardly respect hygiene measures, and if you go to the displaced persons' camps, you'll see that people are crammed into small shacks, and that doesn't save them from contamination. To protect myself from this epidemic, I do my best to always respect hygiene measures, such as washing my hands every time after washing or before eating.
When there's a lot of dust in the air and people are supposed to breathe it, it causes flu. But this epidemic is becoming worrying in Goma because there are houses under construction almost everywhere. In every avenue, there are houses under construction. And when the wind blows, dust comes out. Residents are also throwing leftover building materials like cement all over the place. And that's why flu is becoming an epidemic now. To protect myself from flu, I try to keep clean and well covered. The authorities need to build drinking fountains all over the place and connect water to our plots, because we must be scrupulous about hygiene.
Cholera is becoming a threat in the town because of the difficulties in observing hygiene measures. We have no water to keep our children clean after using the toilet, and they often eat without even washing their hands, which is why they have cholera.
Dr. Zildu Hurisa is an internist and tropical and infectious disease specialist from Ethiopia, RC University. He explains unique environmental, social, and economic factors that contribute to the spread and impact of viral diseases.
We have seen over 30 different viral infections that has re-emerged over the last couple of decades. Yeah, the first thing is awareness creation. Because of an increased population, so the agricultural impact is also huge. Livestock, interaction with the livestock, interaction with the wild animals from which we get the infection. So awareness in the first place. And the second is surveillance method. There has to be a strong surveillance method, which basically has to be supported through aware North-South collaboration, because this will require some degree of skill transfer and also technologies. The other is preventive methods, prevention. One is investing in vaccine development, drugs, improving the quality of life, including sanitation, education, malnutrition, which suppresses the immunity and contributes for the severe illnesses in general. This is not in particular for viral infection as well. So it works for the other health, infectious diseases. And the other is the improving the number of healthcare workers.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Every year, the world commemorates World Cancer Day on February 4th to raise awareness and to strengthen actions towards improving access to prevention and care. Nearly 20 million new cases of cancer are diagnosed worldwide every year. By 2045, this figure will exceed 32 million, according to the World Health Organization. Cancer is rapidly becoming one of the leading causes of death in Kenya, with the country's population facing cancer diagnosis at an alarming rate. Yet, despite advancements in medical treatment, treatments are hindered by two powerful obstacles: stigma and poverty.
Stigma and poverty. Take a look.
Esperanza Minor initially found herself in denial after being diagnosed with breast cancer. For months, she kept her diagnosis a secret from her family, delaying essential treatment. But the emotional burden was only part of her struggle.
So where are you going to get the money from? You can go to people. Sometimes even you call people, they don't even pick your calls.
Each round of chemotherapy costs 35,000 Kenyan shillings, over $280, which is too expensive for many patients in Kenya. According to a recent World Bank report, most cancer cases are diagnosed at advanced stages, leaving families with few treatment options and often pushing them into crippling debts. Stigma makes the problem worse.
There is a lot of stigma associated with cancer of the cervix, the female reproductive system, a bit taboo. So what tends to happen, a lot of these women have early symptoms of the disease, but fear coming out to have them attended to. Or alternatively, yes, they know there's something off, but then they think in terms of, if I go speaking to my husband, for example, who's the one who's meant to take me to hospital, I'll be replaced.
Government data show that cancer diagnoses in Kenya are on the rise, with an alarming 30% increase in annual cases between 2012 and 2018. The Health Ministry attributes this spike to improved life expectancy and the growing prevalence of unhealthy lifestyle choices such as lack of physical exercise, alcohol abuse and smoking. Despite the challenges, Esperanza remains hopeful. She has found support in the form of Muthoni Maina, a fellow survivor who has launched what she calls called a cancer cafe. It is a safe space for patients to talk and find support.
90% of the population is either affected by cancer, know somebody who has cancer, or has it themselves. So that's literally a very big chunk of the population for us not to have that conversation. So the fact that now it's a conversation that is being had over and over again is going to get rid of the stigma.
Muthoni believes that fostering open dialogue in communities is essential for raising awareness about breast and cervical cancer, particularly in areas where stigma still prevails.
Cancer touches millions of lives in countless ways. Attila Lee, a resident of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has been battling cancer for decades. VOA's Jean-Louis Mafema shares his unique journey.
Attila Lee, a 60-year-old Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania resident, was diagnosed with cancer at age 12. In 1975, at age 3, his grandmother, who was bathing him at the time, felt a lump in his right armpit.
My grandmother came to the United States to visit. She was bathing me, I was 3 years old, and found a lump in my right armpit. And next thing you know, they said, there's a lump here. You know how parents are, they just think it's nothing. And about 9 years later, I ended up getting Hodgkin's stage 3. I had a spleen removed, big surgery. Ending up with chemo and radiation treatments.
In 1993, Attila had a relapse. It required another 6 months of chemotherapy. Still, his ordeal was not over.
I had secondary cancers, rectal cancer 2013. I had surgery, chemo radiation treatments. And then later I had colon cancer 2020, stage 2 colon cancer. And they removed 8 inches of my left descending colon and it reattached.
The chemotherapy treatment and radiation was not without risks. His treatment led to hip bone damage and eventually congestive heart failure.
2018, I had two hip replacements, 2018 and 2020. Again, this affected my skeletal and also I have currently now, I have congestive heart failure. It's inoperable. You can't do anything of it because of the extent of the differences of the deterioration from the chest radiation chemos from childhood.
Even though he had endured and overcome life-threatening medical challenges, many would not even want to face, Attila remains positive and constantly active.
I love exercise and I like to keep myself active. I taught martial arts and yoga, regardless of all those two stages I mentioned. It wasn't easy, but I did it, you know, just to keep going. You know, it's the attitude of continuous of physically, emotionally, and spiritually for me. You know, just to keep going. I don't let any health obstacles or any obstacles just put me down. The word is, I go through my obstacles that may knock me down, but it's not going to knock me out. So the attitude is, regardless of what stage of obstacles, whether it's health challenges or anything way of life of challenges, it's not to allow the situation knock you out. It's normal for all of us to be knocked down as long as we don't get knocked out through any kind of negative or any challenges. Not give up.
After close to 49 years of struggle with a disease that has taken the lives of millions of people, Attila remains determined to keep up with his routine of daily exercise, yoga, and meditation.
Now to the Democratic Republic of Congo. As humanitarian crisis worsens in the DRC, aid agencies have expressed deep concern for thousands of people forced to flee their homes in desperate need of safety and humanitarian assistance. Global Christian humanitarian organization World Vision warns that many families fleeing the conflict in the eastern Congolese city of Goma face unimaginable challenges following several days of intense fighting between the Rwandan-backed M23 rebels and the Congolese army for control of the city. VOA's reporter Ruben Kiama spoke with David Munkle, World Vision's head of operations for Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
Goma and Eastern DRC has been facing for a very long time ebbs and flow of insecurity. And in the past 2 years, the insecurity has steadily risen to the point where entire swaths of territory were not accessible. There was a high amount of vulnerability. Literally millions of people were being displaced by growing violence. And in the past couple of weeks, we could see the armed group, M23, take multiple cities and towns. And it led ultimately to, we could say, a pitched battle for Goma, where basically the entire city was forced to hibernate and stay in their houses for several days. And it's only in the past, I would say, 24 hours, really, where the city has begun to open up again. There's still no electricity. There's still no really phone services. Water isn't frequent. So it's a city still in crisis, but we can say, hopefully, the worst of the conflict in this city has passed. But we have greater concerns for many other areas throughout Eastern DRC.
And what's the current humanitarian situation like?
It's gone from bad to worse, because before all of this conflict in the past few weeks, there were already a couple of million displaced people, many of whom were children, unaccompanied children, vulnerable families. And as this conflict again has grown, the number of displaced people grew with it. But due to the conflict, access became almost non-existent. So we're in a situation right now where there's a greater number of people with front-level needs and almost no way to get that to them. So we're really at a crisis point in terms of our humanitarian efforts. We're doing our very best to try and negotiate for humanitarian access, but it's incredibly difficult right now. We're planning for worst-case scenarios, but we are hoping, as a humanitarian community, for better outcomes.
How is World Vision and other aid agencies coping with helping those affected? And what are the main challenges working in that region right now?
One of the main challenges is making sure our people are okay, because so many of our responders are from Goma. They live in Goma, so they haven't been able to move. They've been terrified. I've had multiple staff members tell me their houses have bullet holes in them, shrapnel. So really, people could not move. So when we look at these growing needs, and some of these needs, of course, would be potable water, be able to provide really just the essentials of household items, really the basics. Food assistance is going to be massive, especially for when you can consider children who have fled, who haven't eaten for a few days. We're really at a crisis point, but we can't help so many people because access is a concern. And the well-being and safety of our own responders, not only in World Vision, but from across the humanitarian community, has been in question. So it's really going to be an important few days, because as we look forward, as access slowly begins to come up, we're going to be looking to respond as much as we can with very few resources.
What is your message to the international community? What sort of appeal, especially to cater for the unfolding humanitarian crisis?
We really do need more support from the international community. Access is slowly opening up. Needs are greater than ever, and we're asking that we can partner together across this global community of ours to provide first-level needs, as, again, we try and create a brighter future for so many children and families who have been affected by this violence. Unfortunately, what I've seen in East DRC since I've been here for several years has been a lack of a voice for children and families who suffer in this conflict. There's an expression, when elephants fight, the grass suffers. And we don't hear about that grass. And what I'm talking about, of course, is so many countless families who have been forced to run for their lives. And now, not only have they run once, they're being forced to flee again and possibly yet again. And the international community, we really need their voice to advocate for safe civilian space, that we can provide the key essential needs for them as we look to find a greater peaceful solution in Eastern DRC.
That was David Moncler, World Vision's Head of Operations for Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, speaking with reporter Ruben Kiama from Nairobi.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Coming up on Africa 54 TV show, the re-election of the U.S. President Donald Trump means a new foreign policy approach than that of his predecessor, including business with Africa. For this and more, tune in on your local TV station at 1630 UTC.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Ahmadou, in Washington, with producer Mugbili Abaru. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.